Welcome to the Divorce Comeback Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Heidi B., certified and trauma-informed divorce coach, professional planner, and go-to gal for navigating the next steps of your divorce journey. I'm so happy you've tuned in for the tools, topics, and truth talk to start transforming your life today. I truly believe that there are no setbacks in life, only set-ups for epic comebacks. So without further delay, let's continue creating your comeback today. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. My guest today is the incredible Lauren Wickline. Lauren is a licensed mental health therapist in the state of Virginia. She has been practicing in a variety of settings since 2017 to include public schools, acute inpatient and outpatient. Lauren has always been passionate about performing arts to include singing, theater, and Irish dance, and implementing these experiences to include expressive arts, metaphor, and storytelling in all settings as a form of healing. As a recovering, anxiously attached people pleaser, Lauren shares her story to help others see their worth and bring to light ways to avoid being caught in a Peter Pan and Wendy syndrome dynamic in their relationships. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Hi, Heidi. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
I was totally blown away when I read your story, read your blog. I've never heard of Peter Pan and Wendy syndrome. I had no clue what it was, but all I knew was I need to talk to this person and allow this woman to tell others about her story because it showed a lot of signs and red flags that most people don't see. And so last year you experienced a major heartbreak, right?
Mm-hmm.
From a guy who you thought was the love of your life.
Indeed.
And while you kind of went on the spiritual healing journey of rediscovering yourself, you say that you had some professional as well as personal revelations, which really motivated you to tell your story in order to help educate others that were going through narcissistic situations and really how to help people get through this. So like I said, I read your blog and I love it. Thanks for being super vulnerable and sharing that with the world. But I'd love for you to share with our listeners, help us understand your story and what in the world is Peter Pan and Wendy syndrome?
Sure. Thank you, Heidi. So it's interesting. It is not an official term in the DSM diagnosis. You cannot be diagnosed with this term. So when the discard happened, as you guys have probably heard, a discard is associated with when a narcissist just discards you and trashes you and your relationship just throws you like trash. So that's essentially what happened to me this past April. And like everybody else, I had to go inward. I took to social media just to kind of do my own research and get my own therapy. And I started really digging deep in this concept of the Peter Pan and Wendy syndrome. Now, it was coined back in the 1980s by Dr. Dan Kiley, and it's not really used that much today. And in my opinion, I feel like it's a term that needs to be brought back because it's such a simple explanation using a story that we all know. And it's very simple to explain that toxic dynamic. Mm-hmm. So I discovered that and I read the book and then it occurred to me that I was essentially a Wendy in this story, which is an anxiously attached person, a people pleaser who almost assumed like a motherly figure to a Peter Pan. So someone with Peter Pan syndrome, I'll just kind of go over, and I know I break it down a little bit in the blog. And again, Dr. Dan Kiley's book has way more information on it. I'm just kind of giving you the bullet points. But someone with Peter Pan syndrome, it's gender neutral, but it was associated with men when it first came out. So difficulty with responsibilities and commitment. They tend to be on the narcissistic spectrum. In my case, this was a covert narcissist, not outwardly abusive or anything per se. Issues with work and career interests. They're being very self-centered, but they also mooch off of people. They're very reliant on others. They avoid criticism due to their ego being overly fragile. And again, none of us, we all have an ego, and some of us, we don't like criticism when it's not necessary. But with this, with Peter Pan syndrome, any criticism, you would think you just ran over their dog. Difficulty with controlling impulsive behaviors. Avoidance of responsibility and accountability, especially during conflict resolution, which would mean communication and relationships. They tend to want to run away and go play as opposed to addressing conflict. So that's essentially someone with Peter Pan. And then unfortunately, these types, they tend to target very empathetic, but people-pleasing women, aka the Wendy's, with no boundaries. And I had to sit and actually acknowledge that with this journey of, it's not enough just being mad at him for what he did. I mean, I've got every right to be angry because it wasn't my fault, but it's also not enough either. I had to sit back and say, okay, at what point did I allow myself to participate in this for all these years? Yeah. And that's where the hard work comes in that no one likes, but here we are. We have to do it.
Oh my gosh, that's huge. Honestly, that last part that you just said was something that was a game changer for me in my healing journey was, okay, how did I participate in this? And it feels kind of yucky at the time going, well, wait a minute. No, it was this person doing all these things to me. And when I realized that my role was playing a part in allowing certain things or in not communicating, not saying the way that I was feeling or expressing my needs, the not part of it was actually a big part of my participation in the relationship downfall, really. And not really understanding myself well enough, so many different things where I could... And for me, it wasn't like, how can I blame myself? It was, how can I own something again? Because I really think that like a comeback is so much about a reclamation, reclaim.
Big time.
Like, right?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Like, I am all about reclaiming. Thank you so much for my bio. I'm very much into metaphor, symbolism, all that. I'm all about reclaiming who you were before this happened, but not regressing necessarily to the Disney princess rose-colored glasses either.
Yes.
But you had at some point, the game changer for me was like, well, what happened to her? What happened to that person that just would not even think of tolerating anything like that now? So you have to really get back to the roots of who you are, what you want out of life, and just what you love about yourself. And that is one of the good parts about the journey. And there are some ugly parts too, for sure. But that's the most important part.
So can you explain a little bit? You mentioned two different types of narcissism, the covert, and you mentioned...
The more of the overt.
The overt.
Very outwardly. So to me, someone with like overt narcissism, those are the stuff, the kind you see on TV. Those are like the Gastons in Beauty and the Beast, just that big, bolsterous, and just out there. Someone who is more on the covert side, they tend to be emotionally immature, and they tend to have a victim mentality. It's very much poor me, and where it gets really just disturbing with this dynamic is they almost want their partners to be like mother figures to them. And make excuses and just take care of them. And I had to just sit and realize, well, I'm not going to be any man's mother. No, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not your caretaker. I'm your partner. We're partners in this journey. We're partners in this relationship. We both are contributors to this experience. So I know from reading your blog, it seemed like you were really caught off guard.
Very much so. And that's what a discard is. It was very much, it was calculated, but it was meant to be blindsiding. It was meant to be, to knock me off my ass, literally. It was just, when he discarded me, it was all the things that were wrong with you and you're not the girl. I can have that banter. They use that term, the banter with, which is now bull because I've been on so many podcasts, I realize. I just don't do it. It was never any ownership of anything that he did. It was, well, you're just too anxious and we had a bad night. And then of course, at the time when you're heartbroken, you take all that in of like, oh my gosh, what did I do? This is my fault. And of course I didn't send it to him, thank God, but I typed out a letter of just explaining to him how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. But then it occurred to me, like, this person does not care. They don't have empathy. So why am I wasting my time writing this letter I mean, he knows what he did. And so hence the healing journey started of, no, I am going to never want to have to speak or have anything to do with this person again. I'm very, very grateful that I have that option. Like, thank God we didn't have kids or any legal ties or anything. But yeah, hence the healing journey of no more. I'm not going to be this people pleaser. I am definitely not going to sit here and say I was this perfect saint in the relationship, because I wasn't. I did have some anxious attachment issues and just anxiety and just some control things. But a lot of it was just trying to get him to be an adult, essentially.
Get you to grow up. Yeah.
Correct. And then, hence, when I found that term from the 1980s, I said, oh my goodness, this needs to be brought back, because I feel like this could save so many people from getting into these toxic relationship dynamics.
Yeah, that is, it's super important. And the reason why I say it brought to light you were really caught off guard is because I was wondering, now in hindsight, sitting where you are now, can you look back and go, oh, red flag, red flag, red flag. Can you identify any of those things now in hindsight?
Yes, several. And I am starting my own podcast. I released just a trailer and a short episode now, but I'm really going to go into all the details from the very, very beginning. So it's, all the details, every single red flag, everything. But some of the ones that I should have picked up on was that lack of communication. It was a long distance thing for a while. Okay. And I actually, again, taking on the mother figure, had to teach him how to communicate and what expectations are. And one of the biggest things I'll never forget is when he finally wanted to be serious with me, quote unquote, is when he said, well, you're gonna have to kick my ass to learn how to be in a relationship. At that time, I should have run like hell.
Yeah.
So
why, I think it's really important. Why didn't you in that moment? We know now you are who you are now, but in that moment, what was happening? Because I think this happens to many people, right? Yeah. Where they give us the red flag and then we don't do anything with the information.
Well, I hate to say this, but a lot of it was ego on my end, because for so many years, he would always joke around about saying, well, I'm just a commitment phobe and da-da-da. And it was so funny. Finally, I said, all right, well, then goodbye. And then, of course, he comes back in 2021 and is saying all the right things about, I was such an idiot and you're amazing and da-da-da. And coming out of the pandemic and coming out of another long-term relationship, I was lonely. Yep. And I said, well, okay, let's give it a chance. You overly romanticize it is what happens.
Yes.
And that's another thing that I will be talking about more just on my podcast and having other guests talk about too, is just when you're vulnerable, you really need to be really, really careful, because like in the dating world, if you're exploring spirituality, it's not a joke. It's like, you really need to be careful, because that's how cults get you, for example.
Yeah, so. No, it really is. It really is that that vulnerability. That's also, where scammers, they prey on vulnerable people or your vulnerable emotions. Like, how can I get to the heart of fear and scarcity and all the things, any emotion that somebody maybe doesn't feel settled sitting with or hasn't learned how to process through, and that's okay to be in different emotions. Those moments really can snag us into just different situations that we don't even realize we're putting ourselves in.
Right.
We don't know we're doing it.
Absolutely. And that's where I was then. It was almost like, oh my gosh, finally I got the Peter Pan commitment phobe to commit to me. How amazing. I must be that amazing. And again, ego, you have to acknowledge that you have an ego with some things. And I definitely did. I had to sit with that and acknowledge that as well.
I actually wrote that down as something I wanted to talk to you about today that I pulled right out of your blog. You said, but he chose me. He decided to commit to me. I should be so grateful for this, shouldn't I? He picked me. So where do you think this need to be chosen rather than us being the chooser comes from? Like, why do we see so many women fall into this thinking trap?
History, Disney, all of it. It is everywhere. I think just in this last decade or so is that we're learning terms like recovering people pleaser and And I think I what was it in Grey's Anatomy? I think they even had a term called a pick me girl, like pick me, choose me, love me.
Oh, and, yeah.
And think about it, all those romantic shows and movies, they're all ingrained in us. It's very much ingrained as like this hopeless love, and they finally reconcile. And when it comes to real life, it causes problems. And sure enough, I was still in that fairy tale land of like, did I really believe Peter Pan was going to truly come through the window and grow up? I look at it back now and it's ridiculous. It's
He doesn't want to grow up. I think like that concept is actually, I'm so glad you're bringing that concept back to light, because I actually think that it shows up more than we realize. We just haven't heightened our awareness to it. And honestly, like when I got married, I was married to someone younger than me. And I think part of it, actually, I've never said this out loud before because I was never aware of this. And I don't believe he was a narcissist, but I do believe that there were parts of him that truly didn't want to grow up. It was always picking new hobbies and trying new things. And those are great when you have a curiosity around them. Yeah. I'm not saying variety is bad, but the way it was almost like if he didn't feel fulfilled with something and he would go all in, he'd be like, okay, I'm into photography now. And you'd buy all the photography things and be all the things. I'm going to do all these things.
Yeah, impulsive. Yeah.
Impulsive. And then it would be like, oh, I'm no longer that. Now I'm into beer making and do all the things. And it was just like, all in all the time. And it was kind of like this little boy didn't actually want to grow up into this marital space. It was kind of like, and even when we got divorced, he said, you know, it's not you, Heidi, famous last words, right?
Oh, of course. It's not you.
It's not you. I love you. You're my best friend. I believe that. I love you. You're my best friend. You're a great girl. I believe that to be true because I believe that about myself. But the but always gets you, right? But I never even really wanted to be married. I kind of felt forced into marriage. I kind of felt like it. And I looked back and I went, wow, you know what? I did. I gave him an ultimatum at 5 years and said, like, you know what? I am awesome. I am worth it. I am a great partner. And I do want this type of future with you. But he didn't at the time. But that part of him was too scared to say, I don't know what to do with this. Like, I want to play for a lot longer. I want to be young for a lot longer. I am younger than you, literally younger than you. And so I do think that there are aspects of this that also play into some people's, where they're at in their life. What do you think about that? Like,
not
ready to grow up. Maybe eventually, but not quite ready, especially in our 20s. Like, we were 20 and it was like, rush, 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 check all the boxes. And I felt like I was ready to grow up. Wendy, people pleaser. I mean, when you described the Wendy in your blog, I was like, whoa, okay.
Right. It hits you hard but here's the thing. A lot of times the Wendys are seen as just controlling and fuddy-duddies. Like, we don't like to have fun. And that's not true. No. I always want to clarify, like, I don't want to shame people who have like intense hobbies and like to have fun, because I think we all need to embrace fun and our childlike nature at all times. But however, I mean, I swear the night that ended our relationship was he was obsessed with darts, probably still is. And I was always very supportive and going to the events and even did it a little bit. It's like, oh, well, this is what you love. Of course, I'm going to be here and be supportive. But there was one evening where I was starting to get irritated of like, well, are we going to go to bed? Because we've got an event the next day. When he got into that mode, it was like nothing else mattered. And so to me, it was hurtful because it was, well, so you're okay being hungover and tired when it comes to my events, but I'm supposed to keep rallying. And then it was, well, you can go to bed whenever you want to. So it's like, okay, well, yeah. When it comes to stuff like that is when it becomes a problem. I'm all about staying up late and having fun sometimes, for example, but when it is more important to you than, hey, let's go look at this house that we could possibly afford one day. That's when it's kind of started seeping into me of just, wow, this is just not good.
Yeah, because you can be a grown up, you can be an adult, And
have fun.
And have a lot of fun. And you should. Like, play is one of the most important things we can do for ourselves. Tapping into that childlike spirit is so important and so healthy and so loving and so nurturing for us.
Yes.
And it always, like, I love to say, like, it gets to be both, right?
A perfect film. I have a perfect film for that. When people ask me, are there any movies about Peter Pan syndrome? And I said, one movie that is a good example of a reverse Peter Pan syndrome, basically a cured Peter Pan, is Mrs. Doubtfire. Because if you see in the beginning, he's a really loving man. He loves his kids. He likes to have fun, but it's not funny anymore. It's so funny. When I saw the film, I used to think of Sally Field's character as like, oh my God, she's so uptight. I can't stand her. But, you know, she comes home to a mess. She's carrying all the bills and the jobs. He's in between jobs. But when he becomes Mrs. Doubtfire, he hasn't lost that silly childlike part, but he grows up. So yeah, if there's any film of reverse Peter Pan syndrome cure, so to speak, it's that one.
That is so beautiful. I've never heard that before. And I'm never going to watch that movie the same anymore. That's so good. It's so good. So how have you found to break free from this thinking of kind of this picking pattern of like, he picked me, how do we move out of that kind of picking pattern?
Well, a lot of self-work and healing and a lot of looking in the mirror and owning the good parts of yourself and the not so good parts of yourself. Mm. And again, it's what, like with my podcast, I'm going to have like vulgarity. It's going to be raw because healing is not always pretty. There are days where you just want to lay on the floor and cry. And then there's other days you feel like Wonder Woman. Yeah. So I definitely think just by embracing all that, the part of that, and just recognizing who you are as a person, what will you tolerate? What will you not tolerate any longer? And when you start doing that, you kind of start weeding out the people you want in your life, whether it's a future partner or even a friend. And yeah, you just become a lot more picky, and it can get lonely at times, but it also, the interactions I have now, like the friendships that I've enhanced or formed, they're just so much more meaningful, so much more than before.
Mm. Okay, it's time for a 10-second break to tell you about something great. Did you know that there's a community of divorced women who meet up virtually on a weekly basis and heal through divorce together? That's right. Our 12-week comeback community and group coaching experience provides the roadmap, the resources, and the relationships needed to navigate your new normal, create your comeback, and thrive after divorce. Take it from me, when you've got a plan and a partner in place, you'll be moving forward faster in no time. Visit divorcecomebackcoach.com and book your free clarity call with me, Heidi B., today, and see if it's a fit. All right, let's get back to the show.
I could not agree more. I used to think that it was all about more. Like, I just need more friends and more things to do and more money. And now I've realized this year specifically, moving into this new year, that one of my big words for the year is amplify. Like, take what you already have. If you have two friends or one friend, instead of looking for 17 more friends because you feel like you don't have enough and trying to like reach a goal of 17 friends, how about you just focus so beautifully on what you have and amplify that? Like, if that person is super meaningful, like, how can you amplify that? If you only have a certain amount of cash, how can you get really intentional with what you do have and amplify that in a way that makes your life feel way more lit up? So
absolutely.
I just think that's super important.
Oh yeah. Like a friend, my best friend, and I'm sure she doesn't care if I say her name on here, or Melon, who just has carried me through this entire thing. We actually went to see Madonna in concert this past December. And just, it was an overnight trip, but we just sat and talked and said, you know, we need more of this. Even if it's just one night, the two of us up in the mountains just for a getaway, we need that.
Yes.
And so like what you were saying, amplify what you have and just figure out ways to enhance certain experiences. Now we can't go on vacation and fly to Vegas once a month, unfortunately, but we can do things of just really enhancing the friendships that we do have.
That's so important, because I think so many times we fall into the trap of the loneliness story. And what I had a dear friend say to me one time is, if you're feeling lonely, look at who you're with when you are. And that phrase has changed the way I look at time by myself. Because if I'm feeling lonely by myself, what am I not giving myself? What am I not saying to myself? What am I not showing myself? How am I not caring for myself? Like if I am lonely with myself, that's a really important thing to just shine a light on. And it doesn't have to be a bad place to be. It can be a really, really empowered growth space in times where you're having a little bit of solo time. Like I try not to say lonely a lot anymore. I try to just say like, you know what? I'm spending more time with myself because clearly there's something that I'm meant to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. And I am all about, and I said, this is going to be something I want to amplify, to use your word, this year too. Even just a one night solo trip. I went on a solo trip. Luckily, we live not too far from the mountains in Charlottesville here in Virginia. And it was just a 2-hour drive, but I went up to the mountains and stayed in the cabin by myself. This is when I was starting to reach out to different podcasters. And I just enjoyed the weather. I enjoyed just typing and creating. It was so amazing. And I realized that I need more of that. I really need more of that. And it can be scary to do stuff on your own at first, especially when you're used to having a partner. But I will always say, just do it slowly, slowly step out into your comfort zone of doing things on your own. Because once you get to that place of, oh, I'm going to go out to eat and it's fine. You're, yeah, I'm there by myself, but it's fine. and it feels really amazing when you get to that place.
It does. I felt really proud of myself when I got to that place. Like I felt really like I had reached this point where I wasn't afraid to be by myself anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's a very empowering space to be. And I love that you said, just start slow, because it started for me. I love coffee. I went to a coffee shop during the day because at night I was like, oh man, I'm so scared. Everyone's out on dates, which isn't even true. You know, you tell yourself all these things. And then I went on a bike ride by myself. And then I went to the movies by myself, because who do you really talk to at the movies? Let's be honest.
That's exactly. You're going to be quiet anyway.
I
got to the point. Oh yeah. That was like one of my first ones, because we have a really cool theater here where you can actually have dinner with your movie and like a glass of wine. And I said, no, that's going to be one of my goals. I'm going to go on a movie date with myself once a month. And it's just so nice, because I can just sit there like after a day of work and relax. Yeah, it's all about learning to love your own company. And it's okay to feel lonely at times. But you really, really have to sit and ask yourself, like, why can't you be alone? Because that's when we start getting into things like codependent tendencies and the people pleasing. And we really just need to start working on those things, because unfortunately, these personality types, the narcissists, psychopaths, I'm just going to be straightforward with you, they will snatch you, and they prey on you. They prey that you're vulnerable. They prey on your empathy, all of that. So you have to really be safe out there.
Yeah. That's good. Great advice. I know that, like, for me, I truly believe now that it's important to date yourself before you date someone else.
Yep.
After a situation like that, it's like, how can I date myself? So I would just take myself on little dates. And the point, I remember, I can like even taste the martini right now. The time when it shifted and I was like, I'm back. Like I'm good with me, with dating me. Was I was sitting at this little cocktail lounge that I always wanted to go to. And I would always tell my ex-husband, I want to go there. I want to go there. I want to go there. And we would never go there. I was sitting at the bar at this little martini lounge, and I took myself there and I got dressed up and I sat there, and I didn't feel like I needed to fill the space or find someone else. Like in the beginning stages of dating myself, I would kind of like talk to other people and make sure there was a TV there, and all those things are fine. Again, pacing it in, easing it in. But the point at which I just sat at the martini bar, tasted the lemon in that martini, tasted the sauce that was so delicious over that chicken, and just enjoyed my own company, was when I knew I'm going to be okay. I'm doing it.
That's so amazing, Heidi, because mine is very similar over a martini.
not martini magic.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You get it. You have that aha moment. And again, it's not going to be knocked out completely. You're going to feel lonely at times. You're going to feel some days it's like, man, I wish I had a partner. But yeah, when you have that moment, there's no going back and there's no more like people pleasing and lowering your standards. Yeah, mine was the same. It was actually during that mountain solo trip. I took myself to a fancy country club up in the mountains and it was a beautiful night out. And I sat outside at a table looking at the mountains and had a dirty martini. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so much better than having to worry about walking on eggshells or where's the next damn dar bar.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Oh my gosh, it's so good. And it feels so good when you allow yourself to get to that place and you do the work to do that. There's another part of your blog where you say, I knew I had to go and begin my healing journey. I had to go straight into no contact.
Yes.
What is no contact? I know it sounds like duh, but let's explain no contact and why it was so important for you, because I get this all the time. And I try to explain to my clients how no contact like deeply changed my life. Like
yes.
it changed everything for me, but so many people struggle with this. So what is it and why was it so important for you?
Yeah. So no contact is exactly what it means, but we need to amplify it. So that means no social media. You don't need to be looking and seeing what they're doing. You don't need to be reaching out to mutual friends or acquaintances to see how they are. And if you have acquaintances, it's okay to set that boundary and say, I don't want to know how they are or what they're doing.
Yes.
I'm not, because if you do that, and I wish I would have done that the first time back in 2021 when I said, okay, well, but because at the time we never really officially dated. So I didn't feel like, you know, blocking him was necessary. So I'm like, okay, but of course, being the lurker that they are, they're seeing how well you're doing and they miss you. And then they give you that, but that gives them an in to contact you and scoop you right back in.
Yes. To be chosen again, right?
Right.
To be picked again.
To be picked again. Or in his mind, really, truly, I think why he even had the audacity to say, I'll always care about you and maybe we can be friends. No, we cannot. Because in his mind, he always saw me as like a backup, an alternative. And it's just, no, I'm not anyone's backup or alternative anymore. So no contact, especially with people like narcissism, but even emotionally immature people, that's not, they made that decision or you all made that decision to no longer have that. And if you're still in each other's stuff, so to speak, I think it slows down the healing process. Now, I know it's difficult. Like if you have children, obviously no contact completely is not an option for you, but there is such a thing as light contact and just very businesslike, just very, just again, the boundaries of, okay, we're only discussing the children. If it's not about the children, you don't need to be discussing it. Like you don't need to.
Exactly. I call that kind of like, I've talked to clients before who are not sharing kids, but you know, they're caring for their kids together. But then also people who have fur babies, right? The pet sharing is a real deal. And so I've worked really hard with a couple of my clients on how to make it transactional. This has to be transactional. I'm giving, like, it's your turn to pick this thing up and drop this thing off. And when they're with you, you care about them more than a transaction, the pets, right? And the kids, of course, but the actual, like you said, it's a business transaction. It's what's required of us to continue maintaining something that we both care about in a healthy way. And it just has to shift from that no contact to necessary contact, right?
Right, exactly.
From no to necessary, but you have to be really honest about it and you can't fall into that, can't slide that down that slide where it's like,
right.
Oh, well, I'll just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I'll just go into the house and we'll just talk about a couple things over a glass of wine. Whoa, we've crossed the line, right? Like, no, this is how we deal with this transaction, right?
Yeah, I like that. I really like that term too. But yeah, no contact. If you have no assets, pets, kids, I mean, if you have that option, there's no reason why you shouldn't do it. And again, it's blocking someone on social media is not petty. It's just, no, there's no need to have any looking at anything because that's not going to help your healing process.
No, there's no detachment. There's no letting go. There's no option. Like there's it doesn't help the grief distance.
No.
Or lighten or lessen when you're just holding the grip. It's really, when I made that choice, and I'm going to say this really specifically, it was a conscious, committed choice to no longer have my ex a part of my life in any way, shape, or form.
Yep.
In any way, shape, or form. And I didn't do it spiteful or revengeful. I did it with so much love for myself and for him too. And I even had to go as far as to say, hey, can you let your family know it's nothing personal? I love them so much. I can't keep doing it. This is hurtful for me to keep doing this. And so we have to cut those ties if we want to create more space within ourselves for something else, for more of ourselves, for more of another person, for more experiencing of life. There's just not room enough for all of that. And it really was a pivotal choice. It was a fierce commitment. And so far, Lauren, where there were nights where I wanted so badly to just reinstate the Instagram,
to
just poke around. And I told myself, I went to this degree, you have to pretend he's dead.
Like, exactly. That is exactly how my mindset was at that time. And again, this time I was angry and I was hurt. But I knew if I even looked at anything with him, I'd be breaking my own heart again. And I'm done. He has drugged me through enough all these years. And when I finally chose myself, I said, yep, this. And you know what? And honestly, if you've been hurt and if you are a victim of like a narcissist, it is absolutely okay to say, well, yeah, he died. Because in your mind, in your heart, it's done. And sometimes that's how you get to a healing place. And I do have a lot of people talk to me about the concept of forgiveness, but I said, well, here's the thing. From a therapeutic perspective, that is something you choose to do. You don't have to do it. That is very much your own journey. I definitely believe in forgiveness for certain things. And sometimes later down the road, you can have a light friendship with somebody. In some cases you can, but with something like this, after being discarded, I mean, forgiveness, I don't know. I don't know if that's in the cards for me, but I don't want to have that bitterness and resentment. And I said this to somebody on a grief podcast that I went on because he asked me that exact question. What is forgiveness like for you with your situation? And this is going to sound harsh. I said, I don't wish him well, but I don't wish him unwell either. I want to get to a place of he can either become a successful millionaire or fall off a cliff. Either's fine. Yeah. I want nothing. I want indifference. That I want to move towards the place of indifference because I think forgiveness is reserved for people who are good at heart. And unfortunately, I just don't think this was in his cards.
That's really beautiful that you get to honor how it feels good for you also. I think that's really important that we honor what feels good for us. And there's no reason to rush into forgiveness. I do think for me, a big part was like forgiving the parts of myself that didn't know better.
Yes, yes,
that's
exactly.
A totally different angle on forgiveness of just like, you know, I'm going to forgive that version of me. I'm going to maybe I'll get to the place of forgiving that version of him who maybe didn't know better. But in your case, maybe he did know better. Maybe he willingly was doing certain things and was having narcissistic elements that it just wasn't good. So I just think it's all about honoring yourself and taking yourself on the journey that feels right for you and never trying to rush yourself into something that somebody says you should do at this certain time. Like, no, if it doesn't feel good, you don't have to do it.
Right, right. And that's what started me on this podcast journey of going on different shows and then eventually doing my own because a lot of times people don't understand, especially when you're discarded by a narcissist. Like, I mean, my family means well, but they are always just kind of saying, are you over this by now? And it's not a quick fix. And for the longest time, I felt like I had no one I could really speak to about this because when you're caught off guard like that, you don't really get a lot of validation from a covert narcissist when you're in a relationship with a covert narcissist, because a lot of people, when that happened, they were like, what, are you serious? He seemed like such a nice guy. And then of course, here I am, the big supervillain. Of course, I'm embracing that now because whatever. But of course, here I am like, oh my gosh, what did I do? Am I just this evil person? And you start really, the rumination got really bad. But then, when you have that aha moment of, okay, you know what? I'm going to do the self work. And if I need to be the villain in his story, that's fine.
Yeah. That's none of my business, right?
Right.
It's none of my business what I am in your story. What matters is the story I'm telling myself, the story I'm writing for myself, the next chapter that I'm writing for myself. You mention that boundaries within yourself and other relationships are really key. What boundaries do you feel like were maybe missing when you found yourself playing the Wendy role? Or maybe what boundaries did you create after you realized what was happening?
Well, there were a lot of boundaries missing when I was his Wendy. Because again, I think my ego came into place because I wanted a partner, and he is a lot of fun. Peter Pan's a lot of fun. You have a lot of great memories with him until it's not, until stuff gets serious, until someone has to go to the hospital. Then it's not fun to have Peter Pan around, flitting around, being stupid.
So
I think a lot of it, the boundaries were like, okay, well, I'll give him another chance. And I always pride myself on being empathetic and forgiving. But then I start realizing a lot of that, you can be empathetic and forgiving and all those things, but without being a people pleaser, which is what I was, and stroking my ego of, oh my gosh, he finally chose me. Yeah.
What kind of boundaries do a lot of people pleasers typically need to set for themselves?
Who has access to you and what amount they get to you? So for this situation, when we weren't officially dating, I was like his long distance girlfriend. I was his emotional support. And it's so interesting, when I finally set that boundary, I'd said it once before he came back in. It felt good. It felt scary, but it felt good when I finally said, I'm not your girlfriend. Like, we're not dating. I can't be your emotional support for this lawsuit that you have going on. I mean, very much so. So make sure you're established of what you're willing to give to a person. Like, if you guys are, and I say this to people going in the dating world, if you're just talking and seeing each other, you're not established. You don't need to be a freaking character witness at a trial. You don't need to be doing stuff like, being just this overly emotional, supportive person. It's like, that's serious relationship / wife stuff.
Yeah.
And I think we're just so, because again, the loneliness factor can kick in. We tend to overextend those roles too quickly because we want it so badly. But unfortunately, we end up creating a false fairy tale in our mind, and we don't want to do that anymore.
I really believe that boundaries are set to get more of yourself back, to enjoy life more, to boundaries are meant to lend more in the direction of your desires. And that's how I always know if I'm feeling kind of like, ooh, that didn't feel good. I'm like, ooh, do I need a boundary for myself? Like, this is actually for me to have more of who I am and how I want my life to be. And it's a really great checkpoint, I think, when you start kind of feeling those like, ooh, kind of the sore spots or those pokes that don't feel so good. It's like, ooh, maybe that's a boundary check. Time to check a boundary.
Yeah. When you start listening to your body. And again, that's where that self-care comes in. And I said this on another show, when I say self-care, a lot of times people think, going to a spa every day. No, that's not what I mean. I mean, just, checking in on your sleep, checking in on your body.
Yes.
And when something just feels off, that's when you have to start doing that boundary check of, are we oversharing here? And once you start listening to that, I think the boundary setting, it becomes easier and easier as we go on.
You've had so many golden nuggets here today and so much transparency that I know is going to help people go, I resonate with this, or that I need to check on with this. But what's one thing that maybe our listeners can start doing today to create their comeback?
Well, back up to what we said earlier. If you are not in no contact, do that today. listen to me and Heidi. If you're able, if you don't share anything, block them today. It's going to feel weird, but that is your first step in healing. Like start that immediately, because if you're still kind of entertaining that, it's going to be hard for you to kick off that healing start. So to go no contact today, if you haven't already. And then another thing, start going back to nostalgia a little bit. Who were you before you were in a relationship? What stuff did you enjoy doing? And see if you can do that, even if it's something small. Like, man, I really used to enjoy jogging. Go do 5 minutes of it. Just start somewhere and just start. That's all you can do. And just recognize that you're going to have days where it sucks. Mm. And that's okay.
I love asking the question, what did you used to enjoy doing? Because what that allows us to do is, I have so many clients that when I say, let's think about what you want your future to look like, they're like, I don't know. So if you actually just kind of maybe start earlier and go back to a version of you that you actually really enjoy parts of, maybe not all of it, maybe you didn't love your childhood, but like go to a memory or a moment in time that you can recall very easily. You don't have to try so hard. Just let your body do it for you. Let it recall and then go, oh my gosh, maybe I do want to get some rollerblades this spring. I mean, maybe I do want to go join a choir somewhere, whatever it is. Like I was in theater and music. All that. Or maybe I just want to start singing in the shower in the morning, you know?
Yeah. It something can
be so simple, so little. Maybe you want to start listening to whatever, you know, country music again, whatever it is.
Yeah, or like for me, I was always an old soul. Even from the time I was a kid, I was watching Nick at Night and things like Twilight Zone. And it's like, you know, I'm a little odd and I like that. So I'm going to start for my self-care in the evenings. I'm going to rewatch all the Twilight Zones now and just have some tea and have some, or whatever it is. And
I like it. I love that so much. And I love this conversation so much. And I have so much gratitude for all that you're doing and the way that you're showing up in the world and the way that you showed up today. And you've got your podcast coming out, Life After Discard. So excited for that. People are going to want to check that out. Where can our guests get more of you in their life?
Sure. So the biggest place would probably be Instagram. That's where you can find the link to my blog, my podcast. Everything is all in that one spot. So I would say just go there. So my Instagram is Lauren, spelled L-A-U-R-E-N, and it's underscore wiki, just play on my last name. And that's where you'll find, that's where I pretty much link everything.
I love that. Wiki makes me think of like scratching like a good record, like wiki.
that's why. Yeah. It actually came from someone I used to work with. They used to call me that. And it just kind of stuck. So.
Did you ever spin records in your lifetime?
No, but I think that's where he got it from.
That's so amazing.
I was like, oh, that's funny. I love it.
That's so good. Well, I always ask my guests two quick closing questions. And the first one is, Lauren, what is one thing that you love about you?
I would say, well, recently for sure, is just resilience and just not losing my love for the future and love for people and just love to experience things in spite of this. Because there were times when these things happen, we do have, I call them dark nights of the soul, where it's just, what am I even doing? And I don't know, I love that I was able to turn this pain where, and I really did, I mean, trust me, and you saw on my blog, I wanted to lash out and just blast them. I mean, because we all have that rage part of it. But just by saying, no, you know what? This is bigger than him. This is bigger than he'll ever be. So
that's such a beautiful place to honor yourself there. That's so good. And then the last question is, what does joy feel like in your body?
Just being able to be who you are and just that feeling of just being lighthearted and just light about everything and not a lot of tension and anxiety. Like in these recent few months, I have taken less of as needed anxiety medication because you start realizing, well, wait a minute, where was my anxiety really coming from? Now, again, some people do have genetic and it's if you need medication, but just that sense of being light and airy and silly. And like these last few months, I forgot, people tell me like, you're funny. And I forgot that I was funny. And even though my humor can be vulgar and dark, as you'll hear on my podcast, but I forgot that I'm able to laugh and have a good time. So Yeah. Just feeling light and able to laugh.
I love the lightness of joy. That's so good. As you say that, there's more and more light pouring into my window. I don't know if you can see it, but
your word
is lighting up this screen right now. So we hope that this episode has brought a lot of light to the people listening. And again, just thank you for being here and sharing your story and all of your expertise today.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for your platform. I know you're helping so many people with your coaching. It's very much needed.
I appreciate that. And thank you guys for listening. Remember, you are safe. You are loved. You are enough. Go out into the world, shine your light bright, and live a limitless life. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for tuning in. If you loved our chat or know someone who would, take a quick screenshot and share it now, or leave a 5-star review so this message can reach the masses. Let's continue connecting over on Instagram at Divorce Comeback Coach, or go to divorcecomebackcoach.com to start coordinating your comeback today. You can even schedule a free connection call to see if our comeback community and group coaching experience is for you. Tune in next week for another transformational topic. And remember, you are safe, you are loved, you are worthy, you are enough. Take care.